Good morning. The psalm that we're going to get into today talks about just being glad and being overjoyed to go up to the house of the Lord, which is sort of like this reference to worship. And as I kind of made my way forward to get ready, just listening to like all of you scream almost at the top of your lungs, "Rescue me," like I got a sense of that psalm, which is really, really cool. It was really good. To be in the house of the Lord together with you all. So thanks for just being honest in worship this morning through that song. It was really cool for me. That's not in my notes. This morning, like Date mentioned, we're going to start a new series where we get into this idea of pilgrimage as we gear up over the next 6 weeks to do the thing that we do every year when we go to Youth Front Camp South down in Lacine, Kansas for our pilgrimage. And for me, I'm really, really excited to be able to kind of frame this series and to be a part of this series in terms of speaking because, I've never been on pilgrimage with the many of you that have. And so this year, my family and I are going to be there, and so we're excited to finally participate in that practice that's so much at the heart of this community. And then the second reason is Youth Front Camp South is where I work in the summers. It's my summer home, as I call it. And so it's this very special place for me. It's a place that I go often during the year when I just need time to refocus. It's kind of a place of pilgrimage for me personally. And so I'm really excited to be able to kind of frame this series on pilgrimage as we get ready over the next 6 weeks, as we really begin the process of pilgrimage. And we'll look at the Psalms of Ascent, like Date mentioned. And to begin this series, I want to do some significant setup for us so we understand what we're talking about when we use the word pilgrimage versus like a family retreat or something like that. Because we intentionally use that word at Jacob's Well, that we're going on pilgrimage. We're not just going on a retreat. See, the word retreat, which is often used, retreats are good things. Like, don't get me wrong, retreats can be really good. But basically what they are is kind of a time out from life. They're kind of a pause from the craziness of life to just go do something else. That's why, like, a lot of people talk about, like, taking a fishing retreat or a golf retreat or, I mean, whatever it is that you do to get away from life, a retreat is more of an escape from what's really going on. And pilgrimage is just much more rich than that. Pilgrimage, though retreat I think can probably have some spiritual significance, pilgrimage is a much more spiritual, much more rich theological word and a rich theological practice, because pilgrimage signifies something of a sacred journey. It's something about this journey that there's an expectation that God is really in the midst of this, and it's more than just putting aside our lives for a weekend or 3 or 4 days, whatever it is, just putting that aside. And it's about journeying to a place to be on pilgrimage, not just with one another, but with God actually in our midst, and celebrating and remembering the God who is in our midst and rehearsing that God who is in our midst. It's a reframing, I guess, of our lives around the God who's active. A God who's on the move. The God who calls us to follow. So whereas a retreat is maybe simply about that weekend and about that just that one sort of moment in time where we get away from life for a little bit, a pilgrimage is a journey that is about that time. It's about that special place and that time, but it's a space and a time and an event that opens up our life to something more of what God is doing in our midst together as a community. It's about a time and a place that takes on special and sacred significance for us as we travel together and becomes a kind of symbolic marker for us in our lives as we journey every day together as the pilgrim people of Jesus in this place. And so this is, for me, the richness of the word pilgrimage, and it's part of the reason that we use it intentionally versus like our family retreat around here, because it's a word that is both act and being. And what I mean by that is this, that that the actual practice of pilgrimage is absolutely central to it. It's absolutely essential. There's something about the act of pilgrimage, the practice of pilgrimage, that is at the heart of what we do at Jacob's Well and other travelers throughout the world who've done this, that there's act. But it's an act that gives shape to then our being every other day of the year. It's a practice that opens up into a life of pilgrimage. And this is what makes it qualitatively different from a retreat. A retreat, you leave things behind and you come back home and those things are still there. On pilgrimage, those things go with you and you sort them out together in life with community and the God who's at work in and among us. That's the principal difference between retreat and pilgrimage. It's space carved out to deal with life together and to be with God together. It's both act and being. It shapes our lives. So over the next 6 weeks, we're going to delve into this kind of double functioning aspect of pilgrimage. We're going to talk about what it means to be pilgrim people as we prepare our hearts for pilgrimage, the actual act and practice of pilgrimage. And what we're going to do, as Date mentioned and as I've already mentioned, is we're going to look at the Psalms of Ascent, which are Psalms 120 to 134. We won't get through all of them, but we'll get through six of them. And what we'll do, what these psalms are, is these were the psalms, these were the songs, these were the prayers of God's people in ancient Israel as they made their pilgrimage three times a year up to Jerusalem to celebrate, to remember, to be festive, to rehearse who they were as God's people, to rehearse the God who was active in their midst, to worship there, the God who had called them, the God who brought them out of Egypt, the God who continues and continued to sustain them in their affliction, the God who they believed and trusted was on the move with them. And so as they made pilgrimage and as they made this long journey from wherever they were up to Jerusalem to gather together with all the different tribes of Jerusalem, these songs were the songs that were on their lips as they made their pilgrimage. And this is what I would encourage you to do over the next 6 weeks is read these psalms, saturate yourself in them, get in them, read them over and over and over again. Again, it's 120 to 134. And when you do that, what you'll start to see is that these psalms and the prayers that they are, they're not monolithic psalms. They don't have just one voice. They run the gamut of life experience. There's all kinds of experiences that are given voice to in these songs. Eugene Peterson, who's written extensively on these prayers, on these songs, says that pretty much any one of us, regardless of where we're at in our life, any experience that we're going through, will find a prayer in the Psalms of Ascent that gives voice to our life situation as it currently is. And so these psalms are a prayer book for pilgrimage. And so they're crucial for us to consider as we embark, as we prepare, as we go on pilgrimage together. And what you see in them is this, is that in the preparation for pilgrimage, in the traveling, these folks and us, we're not just gearing up for a trip. We're not just getting ready to go on a trip together. We're being prepared out of the circumstance, all the different circumstances of our lives. We're being prepared to encounter God. We're traveling with the expectation that God is present in this pilgrimage with us and God is present to where we are going. And that God will meet us there. And God will be present to us and God will reframe whatever circumstance we find ourselves in. That at the basic heart of pilgrimage is the God who is active and the God who is on the move. And it's God who we encounter in pilgrimage. And so pilgrimage reminds us of this deep seated need for God, the basic bedrock of life, as Eugene Peterson puts it. And so as we begin to now move into Psalm 122, which is what we're going to look at this morning, I want to read a quote from Peterson's book, Along Obedience in the Same Direction, which is this book that's all about the Psalms of Ascent. And I think this is a quote that can shape the posture that I want us to take as we begin our time of pilgrimage this morning and over the next 6 weeks. So here's the quote. It turns out there are some things that don't change. God doesn't change. He seeks and he saves. And our response to God as he reveals himself in Jesus Christ doesn't change. We listen and we follow. We make pilgrimage. Or we don't. when we are dealing with the basics, God and our need for God, we are at bedrock. We start each day at the beginning with no frills. It is reassuring to realize once again that we don't have to anxiously study the world around us in order to keep up with God and his ways with us. So let's do this then. Let's make pilgrimage together. Let's begin right now. So let's read together Psalm 122 as we enter into this journey as a community of pilgrimage. Read with me and then we'll reflect on it together. I rejoiced with those who said to me, "Let us go to the house of the Lord. Our feet are standing in your gates, Jerusalem." Jerusalem is built like a city that is closely compacted together. That is where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to praise the name of the Lord according to the statute given to Israel. There stand the thrones for judgment, the thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure. May there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. For the sake of my friends and of all the people, I will say, peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity. What do y'all notice in this psalm? What observations or comments do you have? Yeah, we're going to pick up on that as we go today. The comment was that there's this word at the end, prosperity, and how that's been twisted and what that's come to mean today, which is so much different from what it meant for them, for these people that were praying this prayer. Good observation. Others. Yeah, that's an interesting observation. This idea that there's like some risk in this pilgrimage because they're praying for peace in Jerusalem, but it's also like, yes, let's go. Let's get to Jerusalem. So kind of this strange tension there. Good. What else? Yeah, yeah. The observation is about sort of the first verse or the first two lines that there's this rejoicing when you said to me, come, let us go to the house of the Lord. This sense of community, this sense of traveling together with other folks, that there's goodness and safety in that. Good. One more.
I'm struck by the contrast between this and the New Jerusalem. This is the urban setting where there's peace and security within the walls. And
yeah, the comment is like in the arc of Scripture, there's this Jerusalem where the peace and security is sort of inside the fortified city of Jerusalem, and then the New Jerusalem is sort of like the doors are blown open, and there's kind of the peace without, or that Jerusalem sort of spills out into the world. Yeah, good observation. Well, here, that's a great sort of segue into what I want to talk about, because a lot of the comments sort of revolved around this image or this city, Jerusalem. And this city, the city of Jerusalem, is at the heart of this prayer. And it's important for us to really understand this prayer and to understand the way that this served as a prayer of pilgrimage for these folks is for us to truly grasp what all that Jerusalem is to them, what Jerusalem represents to them. And so that's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to talk quite a bit about the city of Jerusalem. You understand here, you've seen it, we've remarked on it, we've commented on it, that Jerusalem sits at the center of this prayer. And Jerusalem, to them, you see it in verse 4, where it talks about being the city being compactly put together. I guess it's verse 3, that it's a closely compacted city. The point here with that verse is that Jerusalem is like this geographical center, and even in and of itself, it's architecturally well built. A very sort of mundane detail to point out, except to say that therefore what they're really saying, what this song is really alerting us to, is that Jerusalem is this beautiful city. It's this city of great intrigue and great attraction because of its beauty. And for us to really understand why that's important is it's not just sort of a place that you respect because of its beauty, but the beauty is then identified with another aspect of Jerusalem that was in their minds, and it's this, is that this is the place of God's presence. That the beauty of this city is beautiful because this is where God makes his presence. This is where God lives. This is the holy city, a place of worship, the place where the temple is or where the temple should be. And so pilgrimage to Jerusalem you make pilgrimage to Jerusalem because of its sacredness and because of the beauty of this place, because of God making God's abode there. That's God's home. And so, again, we're reminded then through that the reason that they're excited to go up to Jerusalem is that there's this expectation and this anticipation that in this beautiful city, in this place where things are put together, where God lives, they will genuinely encounter God. They will see God in God's place. They will live and bask in God's presence. And so the excitement at the beginning is, I'm so glad that you asked me to go up to the house of the Lord with you, because I'm overjoyed at the prospect of being in God's presence. I'm overjoyed at the prospect of worshiping, irrespective of what situations or circumstances I find myself in now. I'm overjoyed that I can go to this beautiful place where things are as they ought to be, and I can come into God's presence and be with God with you. So as we sort of look forward and as we begin to think about our own preparation for pilgrimage, the first thing we need to realize with this image of Jerusalem is that we are going with an expectation that we will encounter God, and our only appropriate response is overjoyed worship at his presence. Worship that expresses itself in play. Worship that expresses itself in late night talks on that beautiful carpet in the chapel. Worship that expresses itself in cabins as we share each other's place through the heartaches of raising our children. Worship of the God who is present in our midst. And that, regardless of what's going on in our lives, is something at which we can be overjoyed. But Jerusalem represents something in this song that's more than just geography and more than just the place of God's presence geographically and in terms of architecture and beauty. If you notice in verse 4, this is the part of verse 4, it says this, that this is where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to praise the name of the Lord according to the statute given to Israel. See, all of the tribes of Jerusalem, 12 of them, are scattered now around this city. The tribes of Israel are scattered around this city, Jerusalem. And so as they make their way up for pilgrimage, as God commanded them, what's happening is there's all of the differences between the tribes, all of the things that make them sort of competitive with one another, all of the things that have brought about the sense of division in the house of Israel, in the people of God, is done away with and they're brought back together as God's people in Jerusalem. The pilgrimage, a pilgrimage then was a great gathering of these tribes together. And what it did then to make pilgrimage was a reminder that all of your differences, all of the things that you think make you different from one another are relativized by the fact that you only have your existence in this great interconnection that God has given you as in calling you his people and calling you together. And so you're called to pilgrimage. You're called to go up to Jerusalem to be reminded of the fact that you are one. That the word that you together worship and praise this God, your God, the God who's in whose story all of your stories come together. And so all of the tribes gather together in this relational space that Jerusalem. Jerusalem represents this place where we are in relationship to God, and God puts us in relationship to one another, despite whatever differing perspectives and disagreements we have. God gives us back to one another in a whole kind of way. It draws us back to the bedrock of life, the way that Peterson put it, that at the end of the day, all of our petty differences, all the things that divide us, are relativized by the fact that we all need God. And when we come in pilgrimage to discover our need for God, we discover that there's other folks joining us in that need, and God gives us to that community of people. And as I've looked forward to pilgrimage this summer, this is probably the thing that has been that which I'm most excited about, because I've heard countless stories from all of you who've been there before, who've gone on pilgrimage before, who've journeyed out to Youth Front Camp South. And I've heard stories about relationships that have begun there, relationships that have endured through loss and the hardship of life, relationships that you can't imagine not having now, because these are the fellow pilgrims who journey with you through all of your life. I've heard about the relationships that have been restored as we're forced together in this place to be with one another, that somehow now we have to confront these things that are keeping us irreconciled from one another, and we have to say restoration is what this pilgrimage is about. I've heard about relationships that are deepened. And so the point of pilgrimage, the point of going to Jerusalem and all these tribes that are sort of disparate and scattered coming together and being reminded of that, is that when you journey together, you discover that bedrock of life. You discover that God is intimately relational and thus compels us to be in relationship with each other. And so God calls us from all of our different tribes and all the different places from which we come, and encounters us not as segmented groups of people at odds with one another, but as a whole, as people put together, as people in God's presence with one another. And so really, with Jerusalem at the center of this prayer, as we start to unpack both the geographical side and the relational side, we discover that it's not actually, though Jerusalem represents this place and it's a real place and it was a real pilgrimage and it's really about that place, it's actually much deeper than that. That there's something at the heart of this song where it's not really about Jerusalem after all, but it's about something that Jerusalem was meant to be the embodiment of and a symbol for. And it's found in two Hebrew words, two rich theological Hebrew words, shalom and shalvah. If some of you speak Hebrew, or if all of us spoke Hebrew, we would hear in Jerusalem, in saying that word in Hebrew, we would hear the derivative of both these words, shalom and shalvah. Those two words are compounded and compacted together in this great city's name. And so Jerusalem is meant to be the place where shalom and shalvah come together. And in a second, I'm going to unpack what that means. And we see this at the apex of this prayer in verses 6 to 9. We see it at this great moment where this prayer, this song ends with these words, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure. May there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. For the sake of my friends and of all people, I will say, peace be within you. for the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity. The two rich words that course throughout those verses, shalom and shalvah, are represented by our translation as peace and prosperity, or peace and security. Shalom and shalvah are at the heart of those verses. And we don't have a great equivalent in terms of translation. So with shalom, we go with peace. But shalom really is a more profound kind of peace. It's an integrated wholeness to life. It's when people live in concert with one another and with their environment. Shalom happens when the fissures of life, those things that try and pull us apart, give way to solidarity and intimacy and unity with one another. It's when restoration happens. That's shalom. Wholeness, I think, is probably the closest word that we have to indicate the kind of peace that's envisioned when Hebrews would use the word shalom. Wholeness. And so the way that I want us to think about it as we go, whenever we read the word peace in these Psalms of Ascent, I want us to think about this phrase, shalom is when life is put back together. So in this prayer, in this song, when they say pray for the peace of Jerusalem, what they're really saying is pray that Jerusalem will be the place that it's supposed to be, where people can come and find their lives put back together. Where people can come and experience life in wholeness. And now you see that it's, maybe now you're seeing that shalom is related to this idea of geography and relationality that's at the heart of Jerusalem. It's this beautiful architectural place. Its very architecture is meant to symbolize the kind of shalom and wholeness that this city is to represent and be an embodiment of. And relationally, it's a place where the tribes that are scattered gather and are put back together and say, your differences are way less because of who I am and who you encounter here in Jerusalem. And then shalvah. Shalvah is a word that goes along with shalom and comes together, like I said, in Jerusalem. And it's translated often as prosperity or security. Or sometimes it's translated as like a kind of safety. And it's a sort of a sense of calm or a sense of ease of mind that life here can be as it should be. It's related to the word leisure, actually. And so it's a kind of like way that you go through life that's leisurely. Like there's a rhythm to your life. And shalvah is meant to call out that understanding that life, even when things seem out of place, that when shalom happens, life courses in the way that it ought to. And so you see that there's kind of an intimate link between these two words, between shalom and shalvah. It's like this, with shalom, when life is put back together, then life can prosper. We can relax and settle into a rhythm of life where there's safety and security in our life with one another. In other words, where there's shalom, when we make pilgrimage to a place where there's shalom, where we're actively pursuing this idea that life is put back together, then we are part of an environment where shalvah, where prosperity, where life can emerge and grow. It's a sense of knowing that everything is all right because God is present and we are truly encountering God. But understand this. This is an altogether different kind of safety than we normally think of. We think of safety more in terms of like going in our house, locking our doors, and making sure people can't come in and get us. We think of safety as removing ourselves from things that might be dangerous. The kind of safety envisioned here in shalom and where shalvah can come forward is a kind of safety that opens up space for us to share those things where life seems out of place. It's a safety of space where we can find folks that will travel with us through the hardship of life, that will be our place sharers. And that somehow in the discovery of that, even though the circumstances may not change, the way that we are able to approach those circumstances of life, we feel safe because of the folks that are with us and through whom we encounter God's presence. It's an altogether different kind of safety, where we discover that we might experience shalom and shalvah because God, through each other, is in our midst in Jesus Christ. And we discover that life is not so much put together necessarily just within us, but life is put together among us. And so as we continue over the next 5 weeks now to look forward to pilgrimage, even as we begin pilgrimage right now, whatever our circumstances we find ourselves in, may we focus on this idea of shalom, of our life being put back together in order to discover the shalvah of God. The best place that I know to start this kind of a journey is right here at this table. It's here that we discover God in Christ, who comes and joins his life with ours, who puts his life into our place, brings shalom and shalvah in and among us through his Spirit and through his abiding presence. And it's that which we remember every time we eat this bread and we drink this cup. For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." Join me in prayer.